Today's episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer. All lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Hi, I am Tanya Ransom, the creator and executive producer of Nightlight, and today I'm here with Kai Leeks, the author of Sisters. Kai, how are you today?
I am fine.
Excellent.
How are you?
Oh, I'm fabulous. It's a great day today. The weather is beautiful. The sun's shining outside. It's a really good day today. And I reread your story right before we got on this call so that I could make sure that my memory was fresh because my memory's terrible.
Same.
I want to talk to you about your story, the writing process. You know, I really love Sisters. When I first read it in Black Magic Women Here, which is a great anthology, just absolutely love it. I mean, there are so many stories on Nightlight from here. I think I'm going to end up putting them all on Nightlight at some point, honestly, because it's just so rich. But the thing that I really loved about your story in particular is, you know, one, it's, you know, about this bond between sisters and how that, you know, is not just a physical bond between them where they're, you know, working to protect each other, but also a spiritual bond and, you know, how they help each other feed and, you know, they share in there. And I was wondering, you know, when you came up with this story, did you come up with the characters first or the premise of the Demented, who are the monsters that the sisters are hunting and being hunted by in this story?
I really, honestly, when I came up with this one, it came out of left field for me. I really don't know where they came from. Honestly, I really
been there.
They literally just popped up out of nowhere because during this whole time, I was trying to come up with originally supposed to be a story for another anthology. I was testing about how to tell a story about vampirism and addiction. Mm-hmm. And then I just stopped. Because I just really, and literally, I just only had a sentence. And I just stopped. And I didn't know where it was going. And then a health situation happened. And then they just popped in my head during the health situation. So they literally just came out of left field. I don't know where. But they did.
I have been there. And you know what I've found? Like when something comes out of left field like that for me, it's usually because like my subconscious is trying to process something. You know, looking back on it, you know, do you feel like maybe you were trying to process something, especially, you know, since you were dealing with health issues at the moment?
Possibly. I mean, I do have a sibling, but it's not a sister at all. I'm the older sister. So it could have been something in that kind of field. I don't know. I also think it could have also been that because of the situation, since this is an apocalyptic time, I was going through being annoyed with that show that's on AMC.
Yes.
And it's not really being represented properly, in my opinion. And I really wanted to do that. Yeah. And I really, really wanted to do that.
That was his name, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, I was second guessing myself there for a minute. I was like, oh, I can't look like a fool and say the wrong name. I'm sorry.
So they just came out to represent that, I guess. So, yeah.
That's awesome. That's awesome. The other thing that I really love about this story is that the sisters are monsters themselves, essentially. And, you know, I love this idea that everyone is monstrous in some way. And who we call the monster just depends upon our perspectives. Because in this story, hopefully listeners have gone and listened to the story because we're about to spoil some stuff. So if you haven't, pause this and come back to it. You know, in this story, you know, it starts off with the sisters, you know, they're feeding on the demented, you know, essentially trying to hunt them. And then they become hunted by the demented themselves. They kind of get overrun. And then, you know, at the very end, they find that, you know, all skin folk ain't kinfolk, like you say in the story, in the sense that there are other hunters out there that are also working against them. So, you know, not only are they fighting these monsters called the demented, they're also fighting other hunters at the end. And I love that the ending is kind of ambiguous about what happened. You know, they're shot with darts at the end, you know, so it's not like it's absolutely a fatal wound or something like that, but it could be. But I'm really curious, you know, did you have in mind kind of what happens after that? And you just kind of ended the story there. So what did you have in mind?
Well, I wanted to, when I first started, I wanted to give you like almost like three acts of three different feelings for them. Mm-hmm. So I wanted, since it's apocalyptic times, I wanted you to not really know what's going on, but kind of guess what's going on. So in the beginning, I wanted you to feel like these two normal girls just trying to run away from like possibly zombies. Mm-hmm. So you're all scared and you're like, what the heck is going on here as you're reading? And then it flips to that twist of you finding out that, well, it's not zombies. They're kind of vampire thingies. And then, wait a minute, hold on. The girls are vampires? What is this?
Yes.
And then the girls are actually running for their lives as well. They want shelter too. They're not technically hunting, but they have to hunt because of what they are. And so I wanted to give you that feeling of fear, of their hunger at the same time, and them needing shelter or somewhere to go. And then so when they got to that third act, final act of them finding those other hunters and they thinking it's a safe haven. No. Right. So, or it could be. You just right. don't know. So that's on purpose. So yeah, I kind of had an idea of what it may or may not be there. That it could be a safe haven. It may not be a safe haven. It could be a mix of both. But yeah, I had an idea. I was technically going to work on a short story of part two to it. So, yeah.
And I don't like that you said that in past tense, because I really want to read like and a prequel to this. Like, I need this in my life.
Contacted me about it, I was like literally surprised that somebody enjoyed this story. Like, you can't, like, I'm using left field a lot, but yeah, you literally did come out of left field. Like, seriously, I was like, what? Right. So I didn't know anybody really was enjoying the story like that. But so even when I wrote it, yeah, I had an idea of where I was going to go with it. When I got asked to do another anthology that's also in the apocalyptic world, I said, well, hell, I can possibly do a prequel to this story. Yeah. So that's what I was possibly going to work on, trying to mull it out when I'm hitting the deadline here. So.
Well, if you write it, I want to see it so we can have it on Nightlight. I think that I am not going to be the only one.
You know,
once
the
story airs, I think other people are going to be asking you for it.
Yeah. So I could possibly do that for you guys and tell you and show you guys what's there at the end of this story.
All right. Well, you guys make sure that you get on social media and tell Kai how much you want to read this. Light a fire up under.
Yeah, that's how I am. Like, if I don't get any noise, I'm just like, I'll just move on.
Yeah, I feel you. I feel you. Because you don't know, you know, if your work's resonating mm-hmm. with people or not. You know, sometimes you feel like you're kind of writing into an echo chamber and, you know, getting that little bit of feedback oftentimes, you know, helps you orient yourself into your next story. At least it does for me. Is that the case for you as well?
Yes, 100% all the time. Because it's like that imposter syndrome. I have it.
Yes.
Horribly. Yes. Horribly, I have it. That's why you guys see that is a huge break between me and my main work and everything I'm doing in between. So it's just like...
Yes, I feel you. I feel you. I think most writers deal with imposter syndrome. It's just, you know, to what degree do we deal with it? And I feel like horror authors in general deal with it a little more than some of the other authors as well. Yes. But, you know, you said something about, you know, your other work. I would love to hear about, you know, some of the other things that you've published, what you're working on now. Can you give us a little bit more of a picture of your body of work?
Yes. Well, I debuted with my pararomance horror genre mashup, Sin Eaters. And that's my vampires story series. Three books with a novella attached to it, which is Rebel Guardians. And that's my babies. Got the shirt on.
Oh, nice. Medusa. I love it. Oh, my God. That is an amazing shirt.
That's the popular character of the series. And she's a baddie.
I love it.
And so that's my main series that I have there. Oh, I guess I could show you the book.
Yes.
That's the main series.
Yes.
That's book one.
And what's it called?
Sin Eaters.
Sin Eaters.
Yes. And book two.
Eater's Retribution.
And this is the novella.
Novella Guardians?
Yes.
Yes, okay.
Rebel
Guardians, got it. Making sure this is for folks on audio who aren't watching the video.
So that is a pararomance which has a mixture of horror in it, romance in it, fantasy,
all the good stuff. All of it.
Because that's my baby. I love that. I love writing fantasy. And I love writing like action with it, with touches of horror and stuff in it. That's just who I am. And so I give you all that in there. So you get vampires, you have witches, you have shifters, you have demons, all of that.
I love it.
And then my latest horror was my compilation of short stories of horror.
Darkness Within. I love that title.
And so it has several different short stories of horror, mixtures of horror that I tried writing. Some of them, and I let you all know ahead, a lot of them were rejected stories. so it's just me being petty to myself. And so I released it, and one of the stories you guys going to see later on in another thing releasing next month anyway. So that's going to probably, I'm deciding which one I'm going to give you all out. I'm deciding which one I'm going to release out for you guys to see anyway. So, you'll see that soon. So that's that. I also write romance. So,
well, tell us more about that. I'm sure some listeners read romance.
Let's see if I have a romance with fellow author Nikki Michelle. If you're into sweet romance, that's kind of like Hallmark, but it's for us.
Yeah. What's the title of it?
It is, this one is a series. It's actually a series. This is the third book in the series. The first one is A Christmas Kind of Love, and then it goes after that. The one I just had show you guys is A Juneteenth Kind of Love.
Oh, I love that title, man. That is dope.
So I try to keep it in this in a fictional black founded town.
I've been looking for romance to read. So yeah, I'm definitely gonna cop that.
And we add touches of little magic in there too. And it's just, you know, just everyday, just normal magic. It's nothing fantastical like I do it normally. So that. And then if you like the spicier side of life, I have my Brothers of Kemet series, and it's Be Okay series, and that is, why am I going blank on the title of that book? I don't know why, because I just got everything in my head going on right now, and I'm literally working on the next one in the series, that's why. So one second, I'm sorry, you guys. I'm just really bad.
That's okay. I mean, I forget stuff all the time.
It's because I'm editing it, the next one in it is the third book in the series, and it's a different, totally different brother. So it's just like, what is your title then? So the first book in that series is Love, Trust, and Pleasure.
And Love, it's Trust and Pleasure. I like that.
Yes. So that those the next third book is more spicy than the first two, but anyway, because he's super nasty. But anyway, those are all romance and those little spicy. So if you're into that, hit those up. So yeah.
Yes, I love it. So tell us a little bit. I mean, obviously, like, you've got a huge body of work here.
Yes. Oh, I'm in a whole bunch of short anthologies as well too. So yeah. Yeah, I do. So
what is your writing process? Like, how do you get all of this done? How are you so prolific?
Well, in the beginning when I started, it was like a machine, but it wasn't on purpose. My writing partner, she's very, very diligent. So she would always push me to write. So that's how a lot of my stuff got out quickly and why I have so much stuff. As I slow down, I procrastinate a lot. So that's why it's spread out a little bit more in the later stuff now. So yeah, it's just, my writing process is just, honestly, I learned this from Miss Beverly Jenkins. I'm a pants eater, or she says. Yes. And they just come to me in my head and I just write how I write. And the story comes how it wants to come. And so if it wants to come quickly, it comes quickly. If it doesn't want to come quickly, it doesn't come quickly at all. So that's how it is. And then if I want to procrastinate on top of all of that, that's what happens.
Yes.
So, yeah.
So what do you do when the writing doesn't come quickly? Because I'm a pantser as well. And, you know, mm-hmm. sometimes it's just like, you know, you've got divine inspiration and your fingers are just moving, but somebody else is, you know, you're just onto it, right? And then other times it's like, man, you're trying to write something and it's just like pulling teeth. You just, every sentence seems like a struggle. How do you deal with it when the writing is painful like that?
Well, it used to be I would read a lot, but then I stopped because I did not like, because I write so much in fantasy and stuff, I didn't want anybody feeling like I'm trying to, you know, jack anybody's thing or anything like that. So I stopped reading in general. I would just, you know, take breaks from reading and then, you know, read when I wanted to or whatever. So then in place of that, because naturally I'm a person that always enjoy reading, cooking, and just enjoying movies and TV. So that's what I would fall back to, those natural processes of what I would do. So when I get into those modes, like currently, I have fallen into nothing but K-dramas now. I am just lost into that whole turn of K-dramas right now. Before, I was just doing nothing but movies and watching all my TV shows as normal. Yeah. And now it's just K-drama. And that helps me, especially now that I'm watching a lot of mixtures of romance with the K-dramas and stuff and the fantasy stuff. It is helping me take a look at my own stuff and how I focus on writing and how I presents different stories and how I break down stories and stuff. It really does help me in that kind of like look at my own kind of outline, because I'm not an outliner person, but I am. It's mm-hmm. really weird. if you see I literally have notes, but you would think I'm outlining, but I'm not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, that's me too. Like a lot of times when I'm getting ready to write a story, you know, I'll write it almost like it, you know, just a paragraph of here's what happens in the story. And that's, you know, my outline. And sometimes I start writing and, you know, by the time I get halfway through, I'm like, oh, well, the rest of that paragraph is irrelevant because I'm right. You know, each directions here. So I don't hold myself to it. You know, I just kind of like work through it in my head. So it kind of, you know, I kind of know where I'm going, because I've found that when I don't know where I'm going, that's when I get in those stuck modes. So if I have, you know, a little bit of a compass, then I'm good. If I have too much of a compass, then, you know, it makes me think too much and I get in my head and it paralyzes me too. So I have to have this nice little balance of I kind of sort of know where the story is going, but I'm also surprised as I write it, and it fuels me to keep going. So it's very interesting that you also have that same sort of process. I think I found a kindred spirit in a writer.
Yes, I mean, because it's also, I scare people when I show them, they're like, what? And I'm like, I literally created, if you ever read Senators, I literally, those notes I did created my book Bible for that whole series. And it's literally in the front page of it. So you're like, You're looking at like, she has a whole dictionary because it came from the notes I did. I wasn't outlining it, just was me writing notes to myself to remind myself, well, this character likes this, that, and the other, and just keeping it up to whatever going on.
Tell me a little bit about book Bibles, because honestly, like, I need to do that. And I don't know. I lack the discipline to do it.
I don't have them with everything I do. It was just like with Senators. It failed that way because it's such an extensive book. It was going to end up being an extensive world, and it was going to be a bigger book than what it was. But the publisher at the time I was with had me cut it down. So, and I had to shorten it to the two books that it is. It really was going to be longer than what it was. So that Bible ended up being away just because of that. But book Bibles, in this essence, helped with creating the world building. Mm-hmm. It allowed me to know what each character likes, what world they were at, you know, what city, whatever I was doing with them, and where they were going, their whole family background, all kinds of quirks, everything, the magic building, all of that. So
yeah. It's hard to keep track of all that, especially, you know, in fantasy, when you're building a world with all these different rules that don't exist in the real world. You know, you've got to keep track of that for consistency, because readers will notice if something is inconsistent.
Exactly. And then I'm noticing, because I look at it back and I'm like, ooh, I forgot to plug that in there.
You know, I have a habit of not looking back at my writing, because I find when I do, it like destroys my confidence, because I notice all the mistakes and the things I did wrong and not all the things that I did right. You know, so it's like, on one hand, I want to learn from my mistakes, but on, you know, the flip side, it's like, if I reread it, I'm just going to be like, I don't know why I'm doing this.
Once it's published, I'm done. That's how
I am. Exactly. It's out there in the world. There ain't nothing I can do about it. So it's just out there, and people are either going to love it or hate it or ignore it, you know, and that's beyond my control. I'm going to just let it go and keep moving forward. So I feel you on that. Mm-hmm. So you talked a little bit about a publishing company. I'm curious, do you do just traditional publishing for all your work, or do you do a combination of traditional publishing and self-publishing?
I was hybrid. That publishing company I'm not with anymore, so now I'm just strictly self-publishing now.
I love it. That's, you know, I find self-publishing to be challenging.
Very.
Absolutely. You know, you have to have two different skill sets. You can't just be a writer. You've got to be a marketer and a business person as well. So I'm wondering if you can tell us a little bit about your struggles as someone who self-publishes.
The main thing for me is, like, you have to have some money too. Mm-hmm. So and I don't have that. So because you have to be able to have money to pay for editing, and my editing is very bad. So when I'm honest about that, and I try to have my readers understand that I'm self-publishing now. I don't have anybody to clean it up as well as a traditional publisher. And honestly, you want to be real, traditional publishers aren't that good as well.
No.
But I need the readers to be, you know, a little nicer on the self-publishers in that kind of sense.
Yeah.
So the hard part for that is that, and then the marketing, I have the hardest time trying to get more readers. I don't know how to market to you all. I don't know how to keep you all. I don't. So it's a challenge. I don't know where to go to market and all of that. So that's the hard part. And I mean, it was hard when I was traditionally published too, because my publisher did not handle that at all.
Yeah, most traditional publishers don't, you know, unless you're like a Stephen King or, you know, somebody that's a big moneymaker for them. They're not going to do a whole lot for you. You end up still having to do your own marketing. So, you know, for me, when I got ready to publish my novella, you know, I was thinking like, you know, do I want to try to submit this, you know, get it out there, get it traditionally published? And that's why I eventually landed on self-publishing it, because I was like, I'm going to end up doing all of this work anyway. Essentially, all they're going to do is generate a cover and do the editing.
Exactly.
For me, and I'm still going to be responsible for all this other stuff. Like, I'd rather just, you know, pay for my own cover, pay for my own editing, because I did have the money for it at that time.
Yeah.
And you know, I've been really happy with how it's turned out. You know, I've made my money back. I wouldn't say like I've made like a massive profit, but I also haven't marketed it a lot either, to be quite honest. But, you know, I'm curious, you know, you said that your editing isn't great. And, you know, at least from my perspective, I've kind of found that it's really hard to edit your own work because you know what you intended to write. And it's easy for you to just look over typos because in your head, you know what it's supposed to say. And that's how your brain reads it. You know, it's almost like you have to have someone who didn't write it do the editing to catch, you know, those mistakes and things like that.
Right. And that's what I do. I have a friend, and then I reach out to the writing circles to help me as well. So yeah, that's all you can do, like with self publishing, outside of saving up to pay for editor, which I have to. You just do as best as you can because you don't want to, like, I know not to do it all by myself on that. So you do what you can, however you can. So when I say that, it's just for listeners and readers to understand that aspect of the self-publishing world. Not everybody has enough money to get the traditionally published money for the editors, you know, for their fancy editors. So, you work with what you can work with.
You know? Exactly. You got to be resourceful. And, you know, I love the idea of, you know, using your writing community, leaning on your writing community. Do you belong to any writers groups or do you just kind of have like friends that you kind of work with?
Yeah, I have writing groups, friends. Luckily, I'm not in a bunch of like writing organizations or anything like that. I tried for one, but that fell through. So I have a small little network of writing friends.
Yeah. But is it like you feel like you have a strong network? You know, even though it's small, it's strong. See, I think that's the best way to go. You know, if you have too many cooks in the kitchen, so to speak, you know, too many people looking at your work, it just, you know, for me at least, it confuses me because, you know, one person is saying this one thing and somebody else is saying opposite. It's like,
You're trying to have small, one or two people
that you trust.
Yes,
absolutely. So are you a full-time writer at this point or are you still doing the whole, you know, day job plus or, you know, part-time job plus your writing?
Right now I'm a full-time.
Full-time writer?
Yes. Full-time writer.
That is amazing. Congratulations on achieving that milestone. How long have you been a full-time writer?
But this only happened due to my health scare. So it's not scare, but situation. So it's been, since 3 years now, four. Almost five, coming up on the anniversary of that situation. So yeah.
Well, congratulations on turning lemons into lemonade.
Yeah, there. Trying to. I mean, I haven't been writing diligently, but it's been off and on writing. So yeah, publishing small things here and there throughout.
You know, I've found that writing has just been really difficult for a lot of people the last few years, you know, regardless, you know, of any of their own personal situations, just, you know, the environment that we're in this world right now.
Yeah,
you know, I feel like we're all kind of like
the COVID.
Yes. And we're just like bathing in, you know, stress that's everywhere. And it just like eats away at creativity. And I'm wondering, you know, is there anything that you do to kind of combat that, you know, when you're kind of struggling, you know, we talked a little bit about, you know, when the words don't come, but when you're just not feeling it, you know, when you just, you know, want to zone out with your, you know, K-dramas, like how do you pull yourself away from those things that, you know, you're using to kind of fill your well or distract you from the fact that you don't feel able to work and get yourself, you know, to get your butt in your chair and get some words down?
Yeah, that's when I go back. It's just, I'm an introverted person naturally and just all my life. So typically, you know, I enjoy being inside. So when it gets really heavy, that's what I do. I revert to the TV. I revert to cooking. I revert to drinking some tea. Or I call my girlfriends and that's about it.
That's great.
I love up on family and that's about it.
You know, I'm slowly learning that self-care feeds my creativity and makes me more productive. You know, I used to be one of those people that was like, I can't enjoy anything until I finish my work for the day. And, you know, a lot of days, like I barely got anything done because my well was empty.
Yes.
And I had to learn that some days I just can't get up and, you know, get to work. Some days I got to fill up my well before I can do that. And,
exactly.
You know, I'm, you know, almost 42 years old. It's taken me a long time to learn that, you know?
Yes.
And, you know, I just, you know, I love that you, you know, do your self-care stuff. Cause I feel like, you know, especially as Black women writers,
yes,
you know, and this being Black Women in Horror Month in particular, you know, as Black women writers, you know, I feel like being a Black woman is a unique condition, especially in America. You know, we feel this compulsion to put other people before us, to, you know, carry the weight of the world on our shoulders, to, you know, have to be strong for everybody else and, you know, not have anybody else to lean on. And, you know, I'm seeing a shift in that, where, you know, more Black women are starting to reach out, you know, like you do with your, you know, friends and family for support. And, you know, I think that is a necessary thing that we as Black women need to start doing, is, you know, recognizing that, yes, we are strong and there is nothing wrong with leaning on other people 100%. Sometimes.
Because historically, that's what we used to do anyway.
Yes.
So we have to get back to that mode again.
Yes.
Because we've been losing it because of everything systemically. So
Yes, it's tough. So let's talk a little bit about, you know, I haven't obviously read, you know, all of your work.
Oh, that's fine.
But, you know, I'm curious, you know, how much do you write about the Black experience? You know, not just the culture, but, you know, some of the things that we as Black people struggle with, you know, because I feel like, you know, especially when you were traditionally publishing, a lot of these gatekeepers want to see stories that have Black pain and struggle in them. You know, do you write about that at all? Or do you kind of just stay away from that and you just focus on the cultural aspects and having Black characters in your work?
Honestly, when I first started writing, because naturally who I was, I always gravitated to fantasy, sci-fi, speculative fiction, period. I really was not deeply into like Terry McMillan. I wasn't in deeply into Maya Angelou, though I read them. Mm-hmm. I did. I had grew up on them. I'm from St. Louis, Maya Angelou. So that's what I, you know, that's in my blood. But that, I was like, I love our generation now that are vocally saying, you know, I don't always want to write Black trauma, you know.
Yes.
And that's when I grew up, because I'm 80s baby, and I'm 41 too. I was looked at weird for saying, you know, I don't really want to write Black trauma like that. I want to write the Black girl that wants to be a mermaid, or the Black girl that wants to go run after somebody's elf, or my thing was vampires. So, you know, I want to write those things. I love Storm. I want to write Storm.
Yes, exactly. Like, we are more than our struggle.
Yeah. So it's like, when I write, to answer your questions, to go back, I don't necessarily write Black struggle in that kind of way, though I respect it. I do write, you know, I write romance and stuff, and I write that sometimes we have conflicts, but naturally my thing is like, I don't always want to write conflict between us. Yes, we have it in everyday real world. Yes, we have it between couples every day, whatever. But I don't necessarily want to write that. And no, I'm not trying to always write happy, happy, hee, hee. But it's too many books out there. There's a place for that. You can get that if you want it.
Yes.
Over here.
That's not your ministry, though.
I want to give you a little bit of variety. So yes, though, I write horror. I don't necessarily try to give you trauma. I did my first kind of a trauma story, if you want, in a horror short that I did that's in A Darkness Within. It's the very last story, but it's a revenge thing. So I don't take it in that sense of a trauma. It's a trauma situation that happens, but it's a revenge situation that happens at the same time. So naturally, when you read my stuff, there is trauma situations, because to think of it like the news. Mm-hmm. I wrote stuff taking things, pieces and pieces from the news or what happened in the community and things. But then on top of that, like with Sin Eaters, you have people that are protecting these people that are having these traumatic situations. So kind of balance. I try to give a little balance here and there. So yeah.
I love that. You know, I love authors that are able to have that depth of variety in their work. You know, like I tried to write romance for a while, like I'm just not good at it. You know, I might be able to be good at it if I kept practicing, but
you're right.
It always takes a dark turn.
Yeah, that's how, that's what I am. That, my main erotic stuff, that's me testing. So when you read it and you see like, what, this is my first time going just strictly there. It's a test, honestly. Yes. Mainly my things is, my strong point is the speculative fiction. So
yes. Yes, I love that. I love that. So who inspires you as a writer?
I got to go Black first. So I'm going to say number one, Ellie Banks, Mom Banks.
Yes, yes.
She was the all between. Yes. Everybody. She is my queen counsel. She is the one that is my icon and everything. So when you see me and you see me in my works and everything, she's my number one mention. Next to that, when I grew up, that shaped me. After that was Anne Rice, of course. And then, you know, Bram Stoker. And then
yes.
R.L. Stine and all of that. And then the silly goofy, for the romance part, the silly goofy Avon books and the Harley Quinn books, all those little things. Those,
remember my mom reading those when I was
little. My mother is so cool when I was reading, but she let me read those little things. So,
you know, my mom didn't let me read those. I think because she picked up the more spicier ones, but they let me read horror. You know, so you know, I was still reading. You know, I still had that example of someone in my house reading, and it encouraged me to read. And I just, you know, found horror to be really compelling. For me. So, if, you know, someone was new to Black horror altogether, who would you say that they need to read first outside of, you know, L.A. Banks?
Yes. Well, of course, who also is the other mother is Tana Reeve.
Yes. I love Tana Reeve, dude. Love Tana Reeve, dude.
You have to read her. Outside of that, of Black horror, Brandon Massey.
Yes.
Then next to him, who else was I reading? It's been so long. I had a whole library. It's been so long of Black horror books specifically. Those were my main ones. Those were my main ones. Outside of that, like I said, the I was reading some Stephen King. I never really read a whole bunch of Stephen King, but I was reading Stephen King. Guillermo's, when he did The Strain, I read the whole series.
So I have good.
That was a good series. Blank.
I mean, those were several. Those were several and good, solid ones too. So you know, I don't think you drew a blank there. I think you hit the nail on the head. So you know, my last question for you would be, you know, tell us what we can do to support you. You know, what do you want us to buy? You know, what do you want us to sign up for? You know, what do you have coming out? Tell us what we can do to help lift you up.
Leave me all the reviews. I need help on Amazon. I need help, major help on Amazon. I need help on Barnes and Noble. I need help, all of that. Leave all the reviews.
Yes.
Visit my website, comment, play with it. I decorated and built it just for all the fans. It's like all little trinkets and secret little knit tidbits all on there, and pictures and everything. Please continue to buy my books. Love up on Sin Eaters. Love up on the romance stories on my Ani's Tears. By that, it's a novella. It's mainly fantasy. Just seek me out. I'm on Facebook. Always on Facebook. You can talk to me anytime. I snuck back on Twitter after I did a big old thing about
me
leaving.
I'm not gonna lie, I did too.
But I have a good reason why I did it, but I will say, but I stuck back on. So you can find me back on Twitter, Muskie's Twitter. and so find me there and talk to me anytime. You guys can email me anything. Just support me. That's all I'm asking. Just support me. Talk to me about my stories. Talk to me about my characters who get on your nerves, who you love, all of that. I have a few fans that post up little character pictures of my characters and all of that and have little crushes. It's just, you know, do that. I'm here for it.
So tell us your website address and your Twitter handle so folks can easily find you.
My website is my name, kyleeks.com. And my Twitter, my handles, all of them are Kyleeks. TikTok is Kyleeks Books. So, okay. Yeah.
Awesome. And we will link to all of those in the show notes so we can give Kai all the flowers, all the uplifting. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank
this is wonderful talking
me.
To you and hearing that you have very much the same process as I do, man. It makes me feel validated in some sort of way. Like, you know, oh, I'm not doing this wrong. So.
I appreciate you even reaching out. Again, like I told you, you surprised me.
Well, you're welcome. I love giving people good surprises, especially with money attached to them, you know, because at the end of the day, we all got to eat.
Yes.
Thank you so much for your time today, Kai. Again, really appreciate you joining us and letting us take your story and produce it for Nightlight. I hope you have an excellent day.
You too.
Bye. Thank you.
The Fable and Folly Network, where fiction producers flourish.